where all similarities end. It took them a very long time to understand us, to accept what was happening here and devise the only viable solution to the problem. Likewise, it took me a very long time to understand and accept their solution. It's difficult to ignore your own humanity, to step outside yourself and see through the eyes of a wholly other species. That's been your particular problem from the beginning, Marika. I had hopes that one day you would conquer it. You are the closest I've ever come to seeing myself in another human being. He notices something about my face and kneels beside me. His finger presses against my cheek, and my tear rolls over his knuckle. I am going away, Marika. You must have guessed that. My consciousness will be preserved for all time aboard the mothership, eternally free, eternally safe from whatever may happen here. That was my price, and they agreed to pay it. He smiles. The smile is kind, a father to his beloved child. Are you satisfied now? Have I answered all your questions? No, I whisper. You haven't told me why. He doesn't scold about having just told me why. He knows I'm not asking about his motivation. Because the universe has no limits, but life does. Life is rare, Marika, and therefore precious. It must be preserved. If they may be said to have anything resembling human faith, it is that. All life is worthy of existence. The Earth is not the first planet they have saved. He cups my cheek in his hand. I don't want to lose you, he says. Virtues have become vices, and you've said it yourself. This particular vice follows no rules, even its own. I have committed a mortal sin, Marika, and only you can absolve me. He slips his hand beneath my head and lifts it gently from the floor. He kneels beside me, Creator, Father, cradling my head in his hands. We found it, Marika. The anomaly in Walker's programming. The flaw in the system is that there isn't one. Do you understand? It's important that you understand. The singularity beyond space and time, the undefinable constant that transcends all understanding. They had no answer for it, so they gave none. How could they? How could love be contained in any algorithm? His eyes still sparkle, though now with tears. Come with me, Marika. Let us go together, to a place where there is no more pain, no more sorrow. All of this will be gone in an instant. He waves his hand to indicate the base, the planet, the past. They'll take away any memory that troubles you. You will be immortal, forever young, forever free. They will give me that. Grant me the grace to give you that. I whisper, too late. No, this broken body, it's nothing. Worthless. It's not too late. It is for you, I tell him. Behind him, Cassie Sullivan takes the cue. She presses the gun to the back of my creator's head and pulls the trigger. Chapter 97. The gun falls from her hand. She sways on her feet, staring down at Vosh's body and the semicircle of blood that slowly expands beneath his head, creating an obscene mockery of a halo. She's found herself in a moment she's dreamed of for a very long time, but she doesn't feel what she thought she would feel. It isn't the moment of triumph and revenge she thought it would be. What she feels, I can't tell. Her face is expressionless, her gaze turned inward. Evan's gone, she says in a dead voice. I know, I tell her. He's the one who did this to me. Her eyes slide from Vosh to me. Did what? Broke my back? I can't move my legs, Cassie. She shakes her head. Evan. Vosh. Me. Too much to process. What happened? I ask. She glances down the hallway. The electrical room. I knew exactly where it was. And the code to the door, I knew that too. She turns back to me. I know practically everything about this base. Her eyes are dry, but she's about to break. I can hear it in her voice, filled with sick wonder. I killed him, Ringer. I killed Evan Walker. No, Cassie. Whatever attacked me wasn't human. I think Vosh erased his memory, his human memory, and— I know that, she snaps. It's the last thing he heard before they took it from him. Erased the human. She catches her breath. His experiences are hers now. She shares the horror of that moment, the last moment of Evan Walker's life. And you're sure he's dead? I ask. She waves her hand helplessly in the air. Pretty damn sure. She frowns. You left me tied to that fucking chair. I thought I had time. Well, you didn't. The overhead speakers pop. General Order 4 is now rescinded. All active duty personnel to report immediately to battle stations. I can hear the squads exiting their bunkers around the base. Any moment the thunder of boots and the glint of steel and the rain of bullets. Cassie cocks her head as if she, too, can hear them with her unenhanced ears. But she has been enhanced in another, more profound way. A way I can only pretend to understand. I have to go, she says. She isn't looking at me. It's like she isn't even speaking to me. I can only watch as she yanks the knife from the sheath strapped to my thigh, steps over to Vosh, flattens his hand against the floor, and with two hard whacks, chops off his right thumb. She drops the bloody digit into the pocket of her fatigues. It wouldn't be right to leave you here, Marika. She slides her hands beneath my shoulders and drags me to the nearest door. No, forget about me, Cassie, I'm done. Oh, be quiet, she mutters. She punches the code into the keypad and pulls me into the room. Am I hurting you? No, nothing hurts. She props me up against the far wall facing the door and presses the gun into my hand. I shake my head. Hiding in this room, having the gun, it only delays the inevitable. There is another way, though. I carry it in my breast pocket. When the time comes, and the time will come, you'll wish that you had it. Get out of here, I tell her. My time has come, but not hers. If you can make it out of the building, you might be able to reach the perimeter. She shakes her head impatiently. That's not the way, Marika. Her eyes lose focus again. It isn't far. 5 minutes from here? She nods as if someone has answered her question. Yeah, at the end of the hall, about 5 minutes. The end of the hall? Area 51. She stands up, steady on her feet now and her mouth firmly set. He's not going to understand. He's going to be pissed as hell, and you're going to explain it to him. You're going to tell him what happened and why, and you're going to take care of him, understand? You're going to keep him safe and make sure he bathes and brushes his teeth and trims his nails and wears clean underwear and learns to read. Teach him to be patient and to be kind and to trust everyone, even strangers, especially strangers. She pauses. There was something else. Oh yeah, make him understand it isn't random. That there's no way 7 billion atoms could accidentally coalesce into a person called Samuel Jackson Sullivan. What else? Oh, nobody's allowed to call him Nugget ever again for the rest of his life. I mean, really, so stupid. Promise me, Marika. Promise me.
Chapter 98. The 7 billion. We are humanity. We are one. We are the girl with the broken back sprawled in an empty room, waiting for the end to come. We are the man who's fallen a half mile away. And the only thing still living in us is not alive, but an alien device that directs every resource at its disposal to saving our body lying on the cold stone, to shock our heart back to life. There is no difference between us and the system. The 12th system is us, and we are the 12th system. If one should fail, the other will die. We are the prisoners aboard the Black Hawk helicopter that circles the base while its fuel runs low, swinging over a broad river, its waters black and swift, and our voices are quelled by the wind that roars through the open hold, and our hands are clasped. We are bound to one another in an unbroken chain. We are the recruits hustling to our battle stations, the rescued ones, the winnowed ones, the harvest gathered into buses and separated into groups in which our bodies were hardened and our souls emptied, only to be filled with hate and hope. And we know as we break from our bunkers that dawn approaches, and with it, the war. And this is what we've longed for and dreaded. The end of winter. The end of us. We remember Razor and the price he paid. We carved the initials VQP into our bodies in his honor. We remember the dead, but we can't remember our own names. We are the lost ones, the solitary ones. The ones who did not board those buses chugging down the highways, the empty city streets, the lonely country roads. We dug in for the winter and watched the skies and trusted no stranger. Those of us who did not die from starvation or the bitter cold, or simple infections that antibiotics we did not have could have relieved, we endured. We bent, but we did not break. We are the lonely hunters, designed by our makers to drive survivors onto the buses that scavenge the countryside and to kill those who refuse. We are special. We are apart. We are other. We have been awakened into a lie so compelling that to not believe it would be madness. Now, our work is done, and we watch the skies, waiting for a deliverance that will never come. We are the 7 billion who were sacrificed, our bodies stripped down to our bones. We are the ones swept aside, the discarded ones, our names forgotten, our faces lost to wind and earth and sand. No one will remember us, our footprints erased, our legacies wiped out. Our children and their children and their children's children at war against one another until the last generation, to the end of the world. We are humanity. Our name is Cassiopeia. In us the rage, in us the grief, in us the fear, in us the faith, the hope, the love. We are the vessel of 10,000 souls. We carry them, we hold them, we keep them. We bear their burden, and through us, their lives are redeemed. They rest in us, and we in them. Our heart contains all others. One heart, one life, on the advent of a mayfly's final flight.
Cassie. Aliens are stupid. 10,000 years to pick us apart, to know us down to the last electron? And they still don't get it. They still don't understand. Dumbasses. The pod rests on a raised platform 3 stair steps off the floor. Egg-shaped, tortoise-shell green, about the size of a big SUV like a Suburban or an Escalade. The hatch is closed, but I've got the key. I press the pad of Vosh's severed thumb against the round sensor beside the door and the hatch soundlessly slides open. Lights flicker on, bathing the interior in a wash of iridescent green. Inside, a single seat and another touchpad, and that's it. No instrument panel, no little monitors, nothing but the chair, the pad, and a small window through which I guess you can wave goodbye. Evan was wrong, and he was right. He believed all their lies, but he knew the only truth that matters. The one truth that mattered before they came, when they came, after they came. They had no answer for love. They thought they could crush it out of us, burn it from our brains, replace love with its opposite. Not hate, indifference. They thought they could turn men into sharks. But they couldn't account for that one little thing. They had no answer for it because it wasn't answerable. It wasn't even a question. The problem of that damned bear. Ringer. After Cassie leaves, I drop the gun. I don't need it. I have Vosh's gift in my pocket. I am the child in the wheat. The slap of boots on pavement, on polished concrete floors, on metal risers, from the airstrip to the command center, the sound of thousands of feet running like the scratch-scratch of the rats behind the walls of the old hotel. I'm surrounded. I'll give her the only thing I can, I think, reaching for the green capsule in my pocket. The only thing I've got left. My fingers dig into the jacket pocket. The empty jacket pocket. I pat my other pockets. No, not my pockets. They're Cassie's pockets. I switched clothes with her in the supply shed before we entered the command center. I don't have the green capsule. Cassie does. The slap of boots on pavement, on polished concrete floors, on metal risers. I push myself from the wall and crawl toward the door. He isn't far. Just across this room, through that door, a few feet down the hall. If I can get to him before they reach this level, I may still have a chance. They won't, but I will. Cassie will. Door. I yank the handle down, swing it halfway open, then quickly slide into the space between to prop it open with my body. I can see him. The faceless murderer of 7 billion who should have killed me when he had the chance. And he had several. But couldn't. He couldn't, because even he was confounded by love's unpredictable trajectory. Hall. He must still have the device. He carried it everywhere he went. Lightweight and no larger than a cell phone, it tracked every implanted recruit on the base. And with a swipe of the thumb, it can send a signal to the implants inside their necks, killing each one of them. Vosh. Lying on my stomach, I reach for him, grab the back of his uniform and roll him over. The bloody crater that was his face is turned to the sterile glow of the ceiling. I hear them on the stairs, boots on metal risers, growing louder. Where is it? Give it up, you son of a bitch. Breast pocket, right where he always kept it. The display screen swarms with green dots, a 3-squad cluster's worth heading straight toward me. I highlight all of them, every recruit on the base, over 5,000 people, and the green button beneath my thumb flashes, and this is why I didn't want to come back. I knew what would happen. I knew. I'll kill until I lose count. I'll kill until counting doesn't matter. I'm staring at the screen lit up with 5,000 tiny pulsing lights, each a hapless victim, each a human being. Telling myself I don't have a choice. Telling myself I'm not his creation. I'm not what he has made me.
Zombie. On our 17th pass around the perimeter, or maybe the 18th, I've lost count. The lights of the airbase abruptly blaze back on, and across from me, Sergeant Sprinter barks into her headset. Status? We've been circling for over an hour, and our fuel must be low. We'll have to set down soon. The only question is where? Inside the base or out? Right now, we're approaching the river again. I expect the pilot to change course, bring us over some land, but she doesn't. Megan is nestled under my arm, her head tucked beneath my chin. Nugget presses against the other arm, watching the base below. His sister is down there somewhere, possibly alive, probably dead. The restoration of the lights is a bad sign. We bank over the river, keeping the base on our left, and I can see other choppers circling over it too, waiting for the all-clear to land. Their spotlights cut through the pre-dawn mist, pillars of glistening white. We're over the river now, swollen from an early spring thaw. Above us, the sky lightens to gray and the stars begin to fade. This is it. Green Day. The day the bombs fall. I look for the mothership but can't spot it in the brightening sky. Conversation with the ground over, the sergeant pulls off her headset. Her eyes on my face, her hand resting on the butt of her sidearm. Nugget stiffens beside me. He knows what's coming before I do. His hands claw at his harness, though there's nowhere to run and nowhere to hide. The orders have changed. She draws her weapon and levels it at his head. I throw myself in front of him. Finally, the circle comes round. Time to pay the debt.
Cassie. Through the open door behind me, soldiers flood into the room. They quickly spread out shoulder to shoulder from wall to wall, in two rows, the closest one kneeling, 2 dozen rifles aimed at a single, curly-headed, crooked-nosed target. I turn and face them. They don't know me, but I know them. I recognize each and every face of the ones who have come to kill me. I know what they remember and what they can't. I hold them inside me. It's like I'm about to be murdered by a human mosaic of myself. Makes you wonder, is this murder or suicide? I close my eyes. I'm sorry, Sams. I tried. He is with me now, my brother. I feel him. And that's good. At least when I die, I will not be alone. Ringer. The stairway door slams open and they pound into the hall, weapons drawn, fingers tighten on triggers. Too late for them. Too late for me. I press the button.
Zombie. Across the aisle, the sergeant jerks in her seat. Her beautiful dark eyes roll back, her skull pops against the bulkhead, and then she slumps against her harness. Megan bolts upright with a startled cry. Every recruit in the hold has followed the sergeant's lead, including the pilot. The chopper's nose dips, whipping hard to the right and slamming me into Nugget, who's not wasting any time unbuckling himself. The damn kid gets everything before I do. I play a fast, desperate game of slappies with Megan, struggling to free her first. Nugget's hurled from his seat. I catch hold of his sleeve and yank him into my chest. Then Megan's loose, but I'm not, holding onto her with one hand and Nugget with the other. The river! I scream at him. He nods. He's the coolest one among us. His little fingers fly over the buckles to set me free. The chopper barrels toward the water. Hang on to me! I shout. Don't let go! We're falling sideways. The river is a featureless black wall rushing toward the open hatch on Nugget's side. One! Nugget closes his eyes. Two! Megan screams. Three! I swivel out of the seat, a kid under each arm, and drop feet first toward the opening.
Cassie. The soldiers fall to the ground. One second they're up, the next they're down. Somebody's fried their brains. I'm not sure how, but I'm pretty sure who. I turn away. I've seen enough bodies to last my 10,000 lifetimes, from my mother drowning in her own blood to my father writhing gut shot in the dirt, from the ones before and the ones after and the ones in between. My dead and their dead, our dead. Yeah, I've seen enough. Plus, those kids who just fell, they're my bodies too, in a way. It's like looking down at your own corpse. Times 12. I step inside the pod. I lower myself into the chair. I buckle myself in, pulling tight the straps that cross my chest. In my hand, a dead man's thumb. In my pocket, a green capsule encased in plastic. In my head, 10,000 voices that strangely sing as one. And in my heart, a stillness, a quiet place untouched by anything, beyond space, unbounded by time. Cassie, do you want to fly? The green pill fell out when I ripped myself from the Wonderland chair, and I picked it up without thinking about it, without even looking at it. Then I saw Ringer lying in that hallway, and I remembered we'd swapped jackets. She'd been carrying around the bomb the whole time and didn't tell anyone. I think I know why. I know her as well as she knows herself. Better, even, because I can remember what she's forgotten. I press Vosh's severed thumb against the launch button. The hatch door closes. The locking mechanism hums. The ventilation system kicks on. Cool air brushes against my cheek. The pod shivers. I feel like raising my hands. Yes, Daddy. I want to fly.
Zombie. I lose the kids when we hit the water. The force of our landing snatches them away. The chopper tumbles into the river several hundred yards upstream, and the fireball paints the surface a dusky orange. I see Megan first, her face breaking the surface enough to allow her a gurgling scream. I grab her wrist and yank her toward me. Captain! She yells. Huh? I lost Captain! She kicks against my legs, reaching with her free hand toward the teddy bear that spins lazily away from us. Oh, Christ, that damned bear? I look over my shoulder. Nugget, where are you? Then I see him at the shoreline, half in, half out, back arching as he coughs up a gallon of river water. The kid is truly indestructible. Okay, Megan, climb aboard, I'll get him. She hitches herself onto my back, wrapping her thin arms around my neck and her stick legs around my torso. I kick over to the bear. Gotcha. Then the long swim to shore, which isn't that far, but the water's freezing, and Megan on my back bears me down. Bears me down. That's a good one. We collapse on the shore beside Nugget. Nobody speaks for a few minutes. Then Nugget goes, Zombie? Somebody hit the kill switch. Only thing that makes sense, Private. Corporal, he corrects me. Then he says, Ringer? I nod, Ringer. He processes for a second. Then his voice shaking because he's afraid to ask. Cassie?
Cassie. The hand of God slams down as the pod explodes up the launch shaft. A massive fist flattens my body into the chair, and then the fist closes around me, squeezing. Some wise ass has dropped a 2-ton rock on my chest, and I'm finding it very difficult to breathe. Also, somebody with no regard whatsoever for my comfort and safety has turned off all the lights. I can't even see the eerie green glow that seemed to come from everywhere and nowhere. Either that, or my eyes have been shoved to the back of my skull.
Zombie. No, Nugget, she probably didn't make it. Before I can say the words, Megan slaps my chest and points toward the base. A shining ball of green light shoots over the treetops into the rose-colored sky. The afterimage lingers in our eyes long after it's lost in the atmosphere. It's a shooting star, she says. I shake my head. Wrong direction. I guess, in the end, I was wrong.
Cassie. The feeling of being slowly crushed to death in total darkness lasts for several minutes. In other words, forever. Okay, forever is one word. A word we throw around like we can even grasp it, like forever is something the human mind can comprehend. The straps across my chest loosen. The 2-ton boulder dissolves. I take a huge, shuddering breath and open my eyes. The pod is dark. Gone is the green light and good riddance. I always hated other green, not my shade at all. I look out the window and gasp. Hello, Earth? So this is how God sees you, sparkling blue against the dullest black. No wonder he made you. No wonder he made the sun and the stars so he could see you. Beautiful is another word we tossed around too casually, slopping it over everything from cars to nail polish until the word collapsed under the weight of all the banality. But the world is beautiful. I hope they never forget that. The world is beautiful. A water droplet bobs before my eyes, floating free, the oddest tear I've ever brushed away. Never forget, Sams. Love is forever. If it wasn't, it wouldn't be love. The world is beautiful. If it wasn't, it wouldn't be the world. The wildest thing about holding my brother's memories inside me? Seeing myself through his eyes. Hearing myself with his ears. Sailing the Cassiopeian Sea in 3 dimensions, the way we experience practically everything except the one thing we're supposed to understand the best. Ourselves. To Sam, there is the bundle of colors and smells and sensations that make up Cassie. And that Cassie is not Ben's Cassie, or Marika's Cassie, or Evan's Cassie, or even Cassie's Cassie. She belongs to Sam, and to Sam alone. The pod rolls, the shining blue gem slips from sight, and for the last time in my life, I am afraid, as if I've fallen off the edge of the world, which I guess in a sense I have. Instinctively, I reach for the vanished Earth. My fingertips bump against the window. Goodbye. Oh, I am too far away. And too close. There I am, hearing a tiny voice scratching in the wilderness. Alone, alone, Alone. Cassie, you're alone. And there I am, looking through Evan's eyes at the girl with the indispensable teddy bear and the useless M16, huddled in her sleeping bag deep in the woods, thinking she's the last person on Earth. I watch her night after night and go through her things while she's away foraging. What a bastard I am, touching her stuff and reading her journals. Why can't I just kill her already? That's my name. Cassie, for Cassiopeia. Alone as the stars and lonely as the stars. Now I discover myself in him, and I am not the person I expected to find. His Cassie sears the darkness with the brightness of a billion suns. He's as baffled by this as I am, as humanity is, as the others are. He can't say why. There's no reason, no neat explanation. It's impossible to understand and impossibly irrelevant, like asking why anything exists in the first place. He had the answer, all right. It just wasn't the answer I was looking for. I'm sorry, Evan. I was wrong. It wasn't the idea of me that you loved. I know that now. The stars outside the window fade, overtaken by that nauseating green glow. And after a minute, the hull of the mothership slides into view. Oh, you bitch. For a year, I've hated your green guts. I've watched you, filled with hate and fear. And now, here we are. Just the two of us. Other and humanity. That's my name. Not Cassie for Cassandra, or Cassie for Cassidy. And it's not Cassie for Cassiopeia. Not anymore. I am more than her now. I am all of them. Evan and Ben and Marika and Megan and Sam. I am Dumbo and Poundcake and Teacup. I am all the ones you emptied, the ones you corrupted, the ones you discarded, the thousands you thought you had killed, but who live on in me. But I am even more than this. I am all those they remember, the ones they loved, everyone they knew, and everyone they only heard about. How many are contained in me? Count the stars. Go on, number the grains of sand. That's me. I am humanity.
Zombie. We move to the cover of the trees. If what I suspect has actually happened, that someone inside the base has zapped everyone else. There's not much risk in bringing them with me, but there's some risk. And somebody who should know once told me, it's all about the risk. Nugget is furious. Megan seems relieved. Who's gonna watch her if you come with me? I ask him. I don't care! Well, one of us does, and that person happens to be in charge. Through the woods and into the no man's land boundary that runs the perimeter of the base, toward the closest entrance and the watchtower beside it. I have no weapon, no means to defend myself. An easy target. No choice, though. I keep walking. I'm soaked to my bones, and the temperature hovers in the mid-40s, but I'm not cold. I feel great. Even my leg doesn't hurt anymore.
Cassiopeia. The glistening green skin of the ship fills the window, blotting out the stars. It's all I can see now, and the light from the sun sparks off its featureless surface. How big did they say it was? 25 miles from tip to tip, roughly the size of Manhattan. I'm seeing only a tiny slice of an enormous hole. My heart pounds. My breath shortens, exploding from my mouth in roiling plumes of white. It's freezing in here. I don't remember ever feeling so cold. With shaking fingers, I reach into my pocket and fish out the capsule. It slips from my grasp and spins like a lure through water toward the top of the pod. I catch it after a couple of tries, closing my fist tightly around it. Damn, I'm cold. My teeth are chattering. I can't keep my thoughts still. What else? Is there anything else? What have I left undone? There isn't much. I am more than the sum of my own experience now. I've got 10,000 times my fair share. Because here's the thing. Seeing yourself through another's eyes shifts your center of gravity. It doesn't change the way you look at yourself. It changes the way you look at the world. Not the you, the everything but you. I don't hate you anymore, I tell the mothership. And I'm not afraid of you anymore. I don't hate anything. I'm not afraid of anything. At the center, right in the middle of my view, a black hole grows, reminding me of a mouth slowly opening. I'm headed right for it. I slip the capsule between my lips. No, the answer is not hate. The black hole expands. I'm falling into a lightless pit, a void. The universe before the universe was the universe. And the answer is not fear. Somewhere in the mothership's belly, thousands of bombs 20 times the size of the one in my mouth are rolling down chutes into launching bays. I hope they're still in there. I hope they haven't started to fall. I hope I'm in time. The pod crosses the threshold into the mothership and jerks to a stop. The window's frosted over, but there's light outside. It glimmers in the ice. The hatch behind me hisses. I must wait until it opens. Then I must rise from this chair. Then I must turn and face what waits for me out there. We're here, and then we're gone, he said to me. And it's not about the time we're here. There's no unraveling us, no place where I end and he begins. There's no unraveling any of it. I am entwined with everything, from mayflies to the farthest star. I have no boundaries. I am limitless. And I open to creation like a flower to the rain. I'm not cold anymore. The arms of the 7 billion enfold me. I rise. Now I lay me down to sleep. I draw in deep my final breath. When in the morning light I wake, I bite down hard. The seal breaks. Teach me the path of love to take. I step into the out there and breathe.
Zombie. I've reached the gravel path that borders the security fence when the sun breaks the horizon. No, not the sun. It can't be, unless the sun's decided to rise in the north and has swapped its gold for green. I whip to my right and see the stars winking out one by one, obliterated by a massive burst of light on the edge of the northern horizon, an explosion in the upper atmosphere that washes over the landscape in a flood of blinding green. My first thought is for the kids. I don't know what the hell is happening, and I haven't connected the projectile hurtling from the base to the enormous northern flare. It doesn't occur to me that for the first time in a very long time, something might have actually gone our way. Honestly, when I saw the light, I thought the bombardment had begun and I was witnessing the first salvo in the destruction of every city on Earth. The idea that the mothership could actually be gone didn't even cross my radar. How could it be gone? That ship's unassailable as the moon. I hesitate, trying to decide whether to keep going or turn back. But the green light fades. The sky glows rosy again. And no terrified children burst from the woods seeking rescue. I decide to maintain my heading. I've got faith in Nugget. He'll know to stay put till I return. 10 minutes inside the base, and I find the first of many bodies. The place is a tomb. I walk through fields of the dead. They lie in piles, groups of 6 to 10, their bodies contorted into portraits of silent agony. I stop to examine every gruesome stack, looking for 2 familiar faces. I'm not going to rush, though a voice screams in my head with each passing minute to hurry. Hurry. And in the back of my mind, I'm remembering what happened at Camp Haven, how Vosh was willing to sacrifice the village in order to save it. This might not be Ringer's doing. It may be the result of Vosh exercising the final option. It takes me hours to reach the last level, the bottom of this death pit. She barely lifts her head when I open the stairwell door. I may have shouted her name, I don't remember. I also don't remember stepping over Vosh's body, but I must have, it was in my way. My boot hits the kill switch lying beside her. It skitters across the floor. Walker, she gasps, pointing over my shoulder down the long hallway. I think he's... I shake my head. She's hurt and still imagines I'd worry about him for even 1 second? I touch her shoulder. Her dark hair brushes the back of my hand. Her eyes shine. Their brightness goes all the way down. You found me, she says. I kneel beside her. I take her hand. I found you. My back is broken, she says. I can't walk. I slide my arms beneath her. I'll carry you. Marble Falls. Ben. The late afternoon sun polishes the dusty windows of the superstore a lustrous gold. Inside, the light has faded to gray. We've got less than an hour to beat the dark back to the house. The day may belong to us, but the night belongs to the coyotes and the packs of wild dogs that roam the banks of the Colorado and wander the outskirts of Marble Falls. I'm well armed. I've got no love for coyotes, but I hate shooting the dogs. The older ones were somebody's pet once. It feels like giving up all hope of redemption. And it isn't just dogs and coyotes. A couple of weeks after we crossed the border into Texas, back in late summer, Marika spotted escapees from some zoo drinking a few miles upriver. A lioness and her two cubs. Ever since then, Sam has been itching for a safari. He wants to capture and tame an elephant so he can ride on it like Aladdin, or catch a monkey to domesticate. He isn't picky. Hey, Sam, I call down the aisle. He's wandered off again in search of treasure. Lately, it's been Legos. Before that, it was Lincoln Logs. He's developed a love for building things. He's made a fort, a treehouse, and started on an underground bunker in the backyard. What? He shouts back from the toy section. It's getting late. We have to make a decision here. I told you, I don't care. You decide. Something crashes off a shelf and he curses loudly. Hey, what'd I tell you about that? I call over to him. Watch your language. Fuckity fuck fuck, shithole. I sigh. Come on, Sam. We gotta haul this thing back 3 friggin' miles, which I'd rather not do in the dark. I'm busy. I turn back to the display. Well, the prelits are useless. That leaves either the 6, 8, or 10 foot. The 10s are too tall for the ceiling. Either the 6 or the 8, then. A 6 would be easier to transport, but it looks like crap. The Texas heat has done a number on it. Needles bent and soft, big bare spots in some places where they fell off. The 8s don't look much better, but they're not quite as scrawny. But 8 damn feet. Maybe their storeroom is new ones in boxes. I'm still debating with myself when I hear an all too familiar, all too sickening sound. A bullet racking into the chamber of a pistol. Don't move! Sam shouts. Let me see your hands! Hands! I draw my own weapon and race down the aisle as fast as my bum leg will allow, slipping on the carpet of rat droppings and hopping over fallen shelving and ripped open boxes until I reach the toy section and the kid who's got a downed man at gunpoint. My age, wearing fatigues, a fifth wave eyepiece hangs around his scrawny neck. He's leaning against the back wall beneath the board games, one arm pressing against his gut, the other on top of his head. My heart slows a little. I didn't think it was a silencer. Marika killed the one assigned to Marble Falls months ago, but you can never be sure. Other arm, Sam shouts at him. I'm unarmed, the guy gasps in a deep Texas drawl. Sam says to me, search him, zombie. Where's your squad? I ask. I have a vision of being ambushed. No squad, just me. You're hurt, I say. I can see the blood, mostly dried but some fresh on his shirt front. What happened? He shakes his head and coughs, a rattle in his chest. Pneumonia, maybe. Sniper, he manages after catching his breath. Where, here in Marble Falls, or? The arm pressing against his gut moves. I feel Sam tense beside me and I reach out and put my hand over the barrel of his Beretta. Wait, I murmur. I'm not telling you anything, you infested piece of shit. Okay, then I'll tell you. We aren't infested. Nobody is. I'm wasting my breath. I might as well tell him that he's actually a geranium having a very weird dream. Hang on a second. I tug Sam to the opposite end of the aisle and whisper, "This is a problem." He shakes his head vehemently.
"No, it isn't. We have to kill him."
"Nobody's killing anybody, Sam. That's done."
"We can't leave him here, Zombie. What if he's lying about his squad? What if he's faking being hurt? We have to kill him before he kills us."
His face turned up to me, his eyes shining in the dying light, shining with hate and fear. Kill him before he kills us. Sometimes, not often, but sometimes, I wonder what Cassie died for. The tiger's loosed from its cage, and there's no capturing it. How do we rebuild what's been lost? In an abandoned convenience store, a terrified girl mows down an innocent man because her trust has been shattered. There's no way to be sure, no other option to be safe. "You're safe here. Perfectly safe." That phrase still haunts me. Haunts me because it's always been a lie. It was a lie before they came, and it's still a lie. You're never perfectly safe. No human being on Earth ever is or ever was. To live is to risk your life, your heart, everything. Otherwise, you're just a walking corpse. You're a zombie. "He's no different from us, Sam," I tell him. "None of this will end until somebody decides to put down the guns." I don't reach for the weapon, though. It should be his decision.
"Zombie, what did I tell you about that?"
"My name is Ben." Sam lowers the gun. In the same moment, at the other end of the aisle, another silent battle is lost. The soldier lied. He was armed, and he used the time he had left to put the gun to his head and pull the trigger.
Marika. First, I told him it was a dumb idea. Then, when he insisted, I told him to wait till tomorrow. It was late afternoon and the store was over 3 miles away. They didn't have time to get back before dark. He went anyway. "Tomorrow's Christmas," Ben reminded me. "We missed last Christmas, and that's the last Christmas I'm going to miss." "What's the big deal about Christmas?" I asked him. "Everything." And he smiled, like that had any power over me. "Don't take Sam." "Sam's the reason I'm going." He looked over my shoulder at Megan playing by the fireplace. "And her." Then he added, "And Cassie, most of all." He promised they'd be back soon. I watched them from the porch that overlooked the river as they headed for the bridge, Sam pulling the empty wagon, Ben favoring his bad leg, and the sun cast down their shadows, one long and one short, like the hands of a clock. The crying came with the dark. It always did. I sat in the rocker, holding her in my lap. She had just fed, so I knew she wasn't hungry. I cupped her cheek and gently curled into her, discerning her need. Ben. She wanted Ben. "Don't worry," I told her. "He's coming back. He promised." Why did he have to go all the way to that store? There had to be dozens of houses on this side of the river with Christmas trees in their attics. But no, he wanted a new tree, and it had to be artificial. "Nothing that will die," he insisted. I drew the blanket tighter around her. The night was cloudy and the wind was cold off the river. The light from the fireplace flowed through the windows behind me and lay gleaming on the boards. Evan Walker stepped onto the porch and leaned his rifle against the railing. His eyes followed mine into the dark, across the river, scanning the bridge and the buildings on the other side. "Still not back?" he asked. "No." He glanced at me and smiled. "They'll come." He saw them first, approaching the bridge, pulling the little red wagon with its green cargo behind them. He smiled. "Looks like they hit pay dirt." He shouldered the weapon and went back inside. The wind shifted. I could smell gunpowder. Damn it, Ben. When he came up the walk, grinning from ear to ear like a triumphant hunter dragging the kill back to the cave, I had an urge to slap him upside the head. Stupid risk for a damn plastic Christmas tree. I stood up. He saw the look on my face and stopped. Sam hovered behind him as if he were trying to hide. "What?" Ben asked. "Who fired their sidearm and why? Did you hear it or did you smell it? he sighed. Sometimes I really hate the 12th system. Straight answer, Parrish. I love it when you call me Parrish. Did I ever tell you that? So sexy. He kisses me, then says, It wasn't us, and the rest is a long story. Let's go inside. It's freezing out here. It's not freezing. Well, it's cold. Come on, Sullivan. Let's get this party started. I followed them into the house. Megan jumped up from her dolls and squealed with delight. That plastic tree touched something deep. Walker came out of the kitchen to help set it up. I stood by the door, bouncing the baby on my hip as she bawled. Ben finally noticed and abandoned the tree to take her from my arms. What's up, little mayfly, huh? What's the matter? She popped her tiny fist against the side of his nose, and Ben laughed. He always laughed when she swatted him or did anything that shouldn't be encouraged, like demanding to be held every waking second. From the moment she was born, she had him wrapped around her inch-long finger. On the other side of the room, Evan Walker flinched. Mayfly. A word that resonated. A word that would never be just a word. Sometimes I wondered if we should have left him in Canada. If returning his memories wasn't a particular cruelty, a kind of psychological torture. The alternatives were unthinkable, though. Kill him or empty him completely, leaving him a human shell with no memory of her at all. Both of those possibilities were painless. We opted for the pain. Pain is necessary. Pain is life. Without pain, there can be no joy. Cassie Sullivan taught me that. The crying went on. Even Ben, with all his special Parrish powers, couldn't calm her down. What's wrong? He asked me, as if I knew. I took a stab at it anyway. You left. Broke her routine? She hates that. So much like her namesake. Crying, punching, demanding, needing. Maybe there is something to the idea of reincarnation. Restless, never satisfied, quick to anger, stubborn, and ruthlessly curious. Cassie called it. She labeled herself long ago. I am humanity. Sam scampered down the hall to his bedroom. I guessed he couldn't take the wailing anymore. I was wrong. He returned with something behind his back. I was going to wait till tomorrow, but... He shrugged. That bear had seen better days. Missing an ear, fur that had gone from brown to a splotchy gray, patched and repatched and patched again, more sutures than Frankenstein's monster. Messed up, beaten up, but still hanging around. Still here. Ben took the bear from him and made it dance for Cassie. Stubby bear arms flapped. Uneven bear legs. One was shorter than the other, twisted and twirled. The baby cried for a couple more minutes, clinging to the rage and discomfort until they slipped through her fingers, as insubstantial as the wind. She reached for the toy. Gimme, gimme. I wanna. Well, what do you know? Ben said. He looked over at me, and his smile was so genuine. No calculation, no vanity, desiring nothing but expressing everything. That I couldn't help myself, and really didn't want to. I smiled.
Evan Walker. Each night, from dusk to dawn, he kept watch from the porch that overlooked the river. On the half hour, he left the porch to patrol the block, then back to the porch to watch while the others slept. His sleep was rare, usually an hour or two in the afternoons, and afterward always jerking awake, disoriented, panicky, like a drowning man breaking the surface of the water that would bear him down, the remorseless medium that would kill him. If he had dreams, he could not remember them. Alone in the darkness, awake while everyone else slept, he felt the most at peace. He supposed it was in his nature, passed down from his father and his father's father, farmers who tended the land and cared for their livestock, nurturers, guardians, watchmen for the harvest. That was to be Evan Walker's inheritance. Instead, he became the opposite, the silent hunter in the woods, the deadly assassin stalking human prey. How many did he kill before he found her hiding in the woods that autumn afternoon? He couldn't remember. He felt no absolution in knowing he'd been used. No redemption in understanding he was as much a victim as the people he killed. From a distance. Always from a distance. Forgiveness is not born out of innocence or ignorance. Forgiveness is born of love. At dawn, he left the porch and went inside to his room. The time had come. He'd lingered here too long already. He was stuffing an extra jacket into the duffel bag, the bowling jacket he'd taken from Grace's house that Cassie had hated so much, when Ben appeared in the doorway, shirtless, bleary-eyed, scruffy-chinned. "You're leaving," he said. "I'm leaving." "Marika said you would." "I didn't believe her." "Why not?" Ben shrugged. "She isn't always right. 1/2 of 1% of the time, she's only half right." He rubbed his eyes and yawned. "And you're not coming back," Ben went on. "Ever. Is she right about that, too?" Evan nodded. "Yes." "Well?" Ben looked away, scratching his shoulder slowly. "Where are you going?"
"To look for lights in the dark."
"Lights?" Ben echoed. "Like literal lights, or?"
"I mean bases, military compounds. The closest one is about 100 miles away. I'll start there."
"And do what?"
"What I've been gifted to do."
"You're going to blow up every military base in North America?"
"South America too, if I live that long."
"That's ambitious."
"I don't think I'll be working alone." Ben took a moment to think. The silencers.
Where else would they go? They know where their enemies are. They know each base has an arsenal of alien ordnance like Camp Havens. They believe there's no choice now that the mothership's gone but to blow up the fifth wave bases. Well, I believe that's what they believe. It's what I would believe if I still believed. We'll see.
He shouldered the duffel bag and walked to the door. Ben blocked the way. His face was flushed with anger.
"You're talking about murdering thousands of innocent people."
"What do you suggest I do, Ben?"
"Stay here. Help us.
He took a deep breath. This was hard for him to say.
"We need you."
"For what?" "You can take the night watch and tend the garden and pick up my slack on the hunts."
"God damn it, Walker, what's this about, huh?"
Ben exploded in fury.
"What's this really about? Is it about ending a war or taking revenge? You can blow up half the world and it won't make it right. It won't bring her back."
Evan remained calm. He'd heard all the arguments, many times. He'd fought these battles for months, alone, in the quiet tumult of his heart. 2 will be saved for each 1 I kill. That's the math. What's the alternative? Stay here until staying here is too dangerous, then move to another place, then another, and another? Hiding, running, using the gifts they gave me to keep myself alive? For what? Cassie didn't die so I could live. She died for something much bigger than that. Ben was shaking his head.
"Right, so how about I kill you now and save tens of thousands of lives? How's that math work for you?"
"You have a point." Evan smiled. "The problem is, you're no killer, Ben. You never were."
Sam.
Evan Walker on the bridge crossing the river. Evan Walker with a bag over one shoulder and a rifle over the other, shrinking.
"Where's he going?" Megan asked.
Sam shook his head. He didn't know. They watched until they couldn't see him anymore.
"Let's play something," Megan said. "I have to finish my bunker."
"You dig more than a mole."
"You are a mole.
You gave Captain away." Sam sighed. "This again?"
"His name isn't Captain, and he wasn't yours. He was mine."
"You didn't even ask."
Then she said, "I don't care. Cassie can keep him. He smelled."
"You smell." He left the front window and went into the kitchen. He was hungry. He grabbed his favorite book to read while he ate. Where the Sidewalk Ends. Evan Walker told him it was Cassie's favorite book of all time. "If you are a dreamer, come in." Evan Walker was gone. "Forever," Zombie said. Sam didn't want to think about that. He didn't want to think about Cassie being gone, or Dumbo, or Poundcake, or anyone from his old squad, or his father, or his mother, or anyone he knew before he came here to the great big house by the river.
He was pretty good at not thinking about them most of the time. Sometimes Cassie would come into his dreams, and she would fuss at him about everything. He wasn't clean enough, he wasn't nice enough, he couldn't remember things that she thought were important. In his dreams, her nose was straight, and her hair longer, and her clothes cleaner. In his dreams, she was the before Cassie. "Are you being good, Sam? Are you saying your prayers every night?" One night he woke up Zombie. In his head, Sam still called him Zombie. And Zombie took him into the bathroom and washed the tears from his face and told him that he missed her too. And then he walked Sam outside and he pointed at the sky. "See those stars up there? The ones that kind of look like a sideways W? You know what that is?" They sat on the back porch and looked at the stars while Zombie told the story of a queen named Cassiopeia who lived forever on a throne in the sky. "But her throne's tilted down," Sam said, looking at the constellation. "Won't she fall out?" Zombie cleared his throat. "She won't fall. Her throne is turned that way so she can keep watch over her realm."
"What's a realm?"
Zombie pressed his hand against Sam's chest. "This is." Zombie's hand to Sam's heart. "Here."
This is Phoebe Stroll with Ben Yannetti. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of The Last Star by Rick Yancey. This program was directed by Robert Kessler. Executive producer, Sarah Jaffe. Text copyright 2016 by Rick Yancey. Production copyright 2016, Penguin Random House, LLC. All rights reserved.